Mr. Quinnell, reel 16.
When you were in the when you were in France, did you get many newspapers?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
You got regular
They were
papers,
always at least a week old.
I see. What did the men think of the way the war was reported?
Well, one of the standing jokes was the principal reporter, Sir Philip Gibbs, who was knighted after the war. He made, I'll give you an example, he made the Battle of the Somme look like a Sunday school treat. He reported it that the troops went over kicking a football. Well, now, I believe one battalion, or perhaps one platoon, found a football and, for a joke, kicked it up in the air. But he made a big feature of that. And people reading the account of the first reports of the Battle of the Somme got absolutely the wrong impression. In fact, Sir Philip Gibbs was was a man held up in derision.
Do I take it then that the men really didn't take too much notice of how the war was reported in the paper?
They didn't.
Okay. When you were at home, was there still a very patriotic atmosphere
yes.
in the country, and enthusiasm
yes.
for the war?
Yes. Oh, yes. At the music hall, there were very patriotic songs and so forth. And if anybody got a decoration, he was brought out on the stage, and he was Exhibit A, and roars of applause and so forth. Oh, yes, the people were very enthusiastic still about the war. Patriotic songs on the stage and so forth.
By this stage, on your first home leave, had your own enthusiasm for the war altered?
No, I was I was still convinced that we were going to win, and it was still an adventure to me.
Either at this stage or perhaps after the Somme battle, did you or your mates become more disillusioned and
yes.
more apathetic?
Yes. After the Somme, we realized that sooner or later we were going to get the chop.
Yeah.
You're either going to be killed or wounded. Let me tell you that in one engagement in the Somme, we were 1/10 of the men came out. Well, you can't go through an experience like that without realizing that sooner or later your turn's coming.
So you found that attitudes changed very much after the Somme.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Apart from disillusionment, were there any other feelings that developed amongst the men as the war went on? Any other things that you can personally
yes.
vouch for?
Yes. Some of the men definitely had reached the end of their tether. Now, in the Second World War, men were granted leave because they were war weary, was the word.
It's one thing that interests me. When you were home on leave, and after you got back to your home and had a night's sleep, what was the first thing that you wanted to do?
I must tell you about the first night I came home. I got into my old bed, and do you think I could sleep? No. Sleep wouldn't come. It's the first bed I'd laid in since I joined the army. And when Mother brought my cup of tea up in the morning, she found me fast asleep on the floor. Now, that's true. I got so used to sleeping hard that I couldn't sleep on a soft bed.
Yeah. Were there any particular things which you'd especially look forward to doing when you got home?
Yes. I've always been a great lover of the country. And before the war, I used to do a lot of cycling. It's pretty well every weekend in the summer I'd be out cycling. And one of the first things I did was resurrected my old bike, pumped the tyres up, oiled it and cleaned it. And I rode around the old country visiting the old scenes that I knew in peacetime. And that to me was the most enjoyable thing.
Now, the final episode in the story centres around the Battle of the Somme.
Yeah.
I'd like to take this story up, from the point where you finish your leave, return to France, and were organised with your battalion to be moved to the Somme sector.
Yeah. In June, we were taken out of the line and were billeted in a village called Le Pungwar, which is about 10 miles behind the line. There, we had intensive training. There was a slag heap just outside the village. A slag heap was still in mining country, and the slag heap was the old debris out of the mine. It was about 30 feet in height and about 100 yards long and about 20 yards wide. Well, now, we had intensive training.
What form did the training take?
Marching, forced marching, marching without a rest, and also this slag heap. We attacked it in training, frontal attack, right flank attack, left flank attack, both flanks attack, night attack, and we wondered what the devil all this training was for, but we were to learn later on the Somme.
After the training itself, could you describe the actual move up to the front at the Somme?
Yes.
What things you saw, the impressions you got?
Do you mean attacking this slag heap, do you mean? By this time, we realised that something big was being prepared.
How did you realise that?
Because we could see the number of guns, new guns that were arriving on the front, the amount of shells that were coming. There'd been a great shortage before, but now you could see in the railways were loaded up with guns, ammunition, wagons and so forth and so on. And we knew something big was coming off. And then, in the last few days of June in 1916, we were entrained, 40 men in the carriage, and away we went. We didn't know where we were going. We were never told where we were going. But I know now that we were taken south and we detrained at the town of Amiens, or Amiens, as it is written in English. And in the darkness, we were marched through the city of Amiens, and we were taken. We pulled up in a wood, which was behind the Somme front. There we remained until the morning of the 1st of July, 1916.
In those few days before the 1st of July,
yeah.
How did you spend your time?
We were bivouacked in this wood, and we were not allowed out of the wood. We were to keep under cover, because by this time the aerial activity was one of the sights of the front. And there was a lot of aerial activity going on, a lot of photographing and so forth from the air. So we were in this wood, and our orders were not to be seen outside of the wood in daylight.
Could you see much?
Yes.
Or did you have any opportunity to see the kind of preparations that were going on in your area?
The only thing we could see were streams of supplies, mostly ammunition columns going up towards the front. Beyond that, we didn't see much, other than aerial activity. And that was one of the real sights, because they were very, very exciting, because the British wanted air supremacy, and the fight was going on, and the Of course, the Germans, they wanted air supremacy as well, and the, some of these fights were very, very exciting to watch.
Now,
also, by this time, observation balloons were used on the Western Front. They were these sausage-shaped balloons with a basket underneath and artillery observers would be in the basket. And sometimes the Germans would come over and fire incendiary bullets at them, and you'd see the observer leap out of the basket with his parachute. And all these things made interesting things to watch.
Yes. Now, I'd like you to give me your impressions as clearly and in as much detail as you can manage of the events of the 1st of July, 1916, as they affected you.
Yeah. On the morning of the 1st of July, we were in this wood 2 miles behind the front. Reveille was at 4:30, breakfast was at 5, and we were ordered to be ready to move off at 6:00. At 6:00, by this time the bombardment had started and the ground shook even where we were. And from the edge of the wood we could see the hundreds and hundreds of gun flashes, smoke, and there was, by this time we knew by the sound, by the reports, whether it was field artillery or whether it was garrison artillery, whether it was 18-pounders or whether it was 60-pounders. And I think every gun that was made was used on that 1st of July. Then we were told of our objective, which was a slag heap at Bapaume, which was 5 miles behind the German lines. There was a slag heap there, and that we were going to have a forced march and take this slag heap. Then we knew why we had to spend so much time at Le Pounoir attacking this slag heap, because our objective was a slag heap outside the town of Bapaume, and we would have a forced march through the British line, German lines, and we were going to take this slag heap and we would hold it at all costs.
What happened?
We waited and waited for the signal to move off. Already, everybody was anxious to go, and we waited and waited. At 10 o'clock in the morning, streams of wounded came back past us. Ambulances, walking wounded, and one very pathetic sight, a long stream of about 30 men blinded, being led by RAMC private away to the rear, where they would receive attention. And the hours went by, and then at 12 o'clock we would send the mess orders back to the back of this wood where the cook carts were, and we knew that we weren't going to move, and that we knew then that the front line hadn't been cracked. And it was a very, very despondent battalion that sat down to their meal of stew. We didn't get any orders until the evening, when it was dusk, and we moved up to the old British front line. This was our first experience of the Somme. We didn't know anything about the Somme. And we moved up to the front line, and there we found a pioneer battalion of the South Wales Borderers, because every division had a pioneer battalion. We found a battalion of the South Wales Borderers,